Welcome to Tori Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Melachim Aleph, Perek Tet Vav, Chapter 15. The 22 Prakim of Melachim Aleph are anchored by two main stories. The first 11 chapters deal with Shlomo and his story, and the last six chapters deal with Achav and his interactions with the prophet Eliyahu. This second anchor story of Achav continues into Melachim Bet, continuing on with the stories of Elisha. In between these two anchors, we have chapters 12 to 16, five prakim, five chapters, which deal with the split of the kingdom and the progressive descent of Malchut Yisrael versus what we call the downs and then ups of Malchut Yehudah, which becomes a lot more stable than Malchut Yisrael. In these chapters, the text switches back and forth, focusing first on one kingdom and then on the other, begging the reader to compare them, to think about their correlation to each other. How does one country highlight the other in terms of their religious state, their economic level, and their political lives? So just to almost recap this section, Perek Yud-Bet told us about, chapter 12 told us about the tragedy of the Pilug, the split of the countries. Yerubam, it told us about Yerubam's new religion for Malchut Yisrael and the barely averted civil war between the countries. In chapter 13, we read about the Ish Elokim and the attempt to bring Malchut Yisrael back. Parak 14 told us that Malchut Yehudah was in some ways worse, religiously, than Malchut Yisrael, and that there had been a conflict between these two countries, as well as massive losses suffered by the hand of Egypt. In order to be a good king of Israel, you really need two things. One is to be good to Hashem, and the other is to be good to your people. Each king will be evaluated. In Malchut Yehudah, it will be measuring the king against David, and in Yisrael, it will be measuring the king against Yerubam. Were they as bad as Yerubam, or were they worse? Hashem cares about both countries and sends prophets to each of them to try to get them to come back to him and to also care about each other. After Rehoboam's death, now we're in Malchut Yehudah, we're in the Judean kingdom in the south, his son Abiyam takes over. So this is Shlomo's grandchild, and this is not to be confused with Yerubam's son Abiyah, who died in the last parak. We're now two kings past Shlomo in Malchut Yehuda, and things in Yehuda are not great. We learn very little about Abiyam's reign in Melachim. It only tells us that he ruled for 3 years towards the end of Yerubam's rule and was bad like his father. Evaluated against David, he does not measure up. The pasuk tells us in verse 3, "Vayelech b'chol chataod aviv asher asa lefanav, v'lo haya levavo shalem im Hashem Elokav kilivav David aviv." He followed all the terrible sins of his father that his father did, and his heart was not whole with Hashem like the heart of David aviv. The Mefarshim comment that due to this language of the qualification of this, that he did the sins of his father and his heart was not whole like his heart David, obviously his heart was not whole if he continued in the sins of his father, the Mefarshim learned that actually maybe Abiyam was not as bad as Rehoboam. He continued his father's sins in terms of the idolatry, but only because that's what he knew. That's how he grew up. And therefore, both his religious policies and his conflict with Malchut Yisrael, which is only briefly mentioned here, but Divrei Hayamim expands on it a lot, were mainly because those were Rehoboam's policies, and Abiyam is continuing them. The pasuk also says that it was in David's merit that allowed Abiyam to have a child who was not like him. Pasuk says, "Kilaman David Natan Hashem Elokav lo near Yerushalayim lahakim et beno acharav ulhamid et Yerushalayim." Nevertheless, for David's sake, Hashem his God gave him a light, a lamp in Jerusalem, to set up his son after him and to establish Jerusalem. We get a sense from this pasuk that if the country would have continued along the lines of Rehoboam and then Abiyam, and who knows, every king learning from his father to worship idolatry and have conflict with Malchut Yisrael, it could be that the country would have just been headed towards its own destruction. But because of the merit of David, this could be that there was something good about Abiyam that he inherited from David, he's going to have a child who's going to break this pattern and is going to be the opposite. And the info that we get about his son Asa is very different from his father Abiyam and from his grandfather Rehoboam. Right away we learn that Asa ruled for 41 years, an extremely long time. And whenever you see numbers like this, like 41 years, that's even longer than Shlomo, you realize that the country is heading towards a time of stability. That means that you don't have murder of the king going on, that the country is somewhat stable that they can hold on to a king for that long. And we also learn in Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, "Vayaz Asa Hayashar ben Hashem k'David aviv." He is evaluated to be like David. And the length of Asa's rule allowed him to get Malchut Yehuda back on track because he had just a certain amount of time to do it. He removed the idolatry, he removed the cultic prostitutes that Rehoboam had set up and that Abiyam had continued, and he even removed his own mother Maacha from her high position as the king's mother in the country because of her own personal idolatry, and that was her policy that she continued. So this down of Rehoboam and Abiyam, but then the up within Malchut Yehuda, gets us used to the rhythm that a dynasty will present. Unlike the Shophate system, a king's child takes over for him. And this action does present the country with stability. It's clear to everyone who the next king will be, what the basic policies are, who's going to be in the administration. If another country makes a treaty with a king, they can assume that the next king will still abide by this treaty. That gives a certain just stability to the country. However, it's also a tenuous system, as the king actually then has power to influence people, all the people, not just here and there in a shevet, and then you know when the shofet dies, you know, it's over and we start again. And this is both for good and for bad. Hashem consistently, though, sends Nevi'im to instruct the king as a check for the king, but it's up to the king to decide if he wants to listen to him, and also up to the people to decide if they want to listen to the Navi and perhaps overthrow their king or maybe even move out of the country, as the Kohanim and Levi'im did after Yerubbaal set up his Agalim. So that's where Malchut Yehuda is standing. Things are really getting better under Asa. Meanwhile, back in Malchut Yisrael, things are getting worse. Yerubbaal's son Nadav takes over for him. Nadav follows in the way of his father, but only for 2 years, and then is killed by his general, Baasha, who also wipes out the entire house of Yerubbaal, thus fulfilling Achiah HaShiloni's curse, which is exactly what Achiah told Yerubbaal's wife would happen. And with this, we begin a pattern of kings in Malchut Yisrael. There's a bad king. He rules for a certain amount of time. He has a son. The son is bad as well. The son rules for about 2 years, seems to be to give him a chance not to be like his father. And then the king's family is wiped out. We're going to see this pattern over and over. So as Malchut Yehuda is getting more stable and more religiously connected under Asa, Malchut Yisrael is getting less stable. This is the first dynasty that is not established through the appointment of a Navi, but rather through violence. This is in itself an outgrowth of Yerubbaal's policies. Once he tried to control the religion, he kind of pushes Hashem out of the picture and says, well, I'm going to make the religion the way I want it. And he even convinces Bnei Israel of this. Why should you travel all the way to Jerusalem to worship Hashem? You could worship Hashem right here in Beit El, right here in Dan, at these golden calves. Why should only the Kohanim have this high position? Anyone can have a high position. Anyone in my country can be a priest. We don't need to keep any type of position as important or kedusha as important. And this ideology, I think, really led to Yerubbaal's demise. Meaning, why shouldn't Baasha kill Nadav and kill out Yerubbaal's family? I also want to be the king. Okay, so you're the king? Well, too bad. There's nothing inherent about your kingship that should be passed on. This reminds us of David's warning to the people about killing or hurting Shaul, who is the Mashiach Hashem, the appointed one of God. David taught over and over that Hashem will give him the kingdom when Hashem decides that it's time. David doesn't have to do it himself. This same attitude accompanied David throughout his whole life and allowed him to see that he can make a mistake and he can listen to criticism and he's able to reflect and fix himself because he really does see Hashem in his life and he knows that when things are supposed to come to him, they will. And Hashem is really a part of David's life, and this is the opposite of Yerubbaal. So Baasha, the general, follows Yerubbaal's religion and also the policy of conflict and war with Malchut Yehuda. At some point, however, the conflict between the two countries escalates. Pasuk Yud Zayin, Vaya'al Baasha Melech Yisrael al Yehuda. Baasha, the king of Israel, gets up against Malchut Yehuda, against the kingdom of Judea. Vayiven et haramah. He built up the city of Ramah, Levilti Teit Yitzo Uvo. No one could come in, La'asa Melech Yehuda, and doesn't have an entryway for Asa, the king of Yehuda. Abarbanel explains that this city of Ramah was a border city between the two countries, north of Yerushalayim, but south of Beit El. Technically, the city is in the Nachala of Binyamin, so in Yehuda's territory, because Malchut Yehuda also included the territory of Binyamin, who lived right next to them. Basha builds up this city as a sign of an irrevocable split between the two. No one would be able to leave Israel and go to Yehuda, or ostensibly to go to the Beit HaMikdash. There would be absolutely no relationship between them at all. Professor Yehuda Kiel of Dat Mikra cites Josephus, who explains also that Basha intended the city of Ramah to be a fortified city on the border so that Basha could house his troops there, and from that city they could make raids into Malchut Yehuda. In response, Asa does something that does not seem in keeping with his character of doing what's right in Hashem's eyes. He takes the leftover gold and silver from his treasure house, what was left after Paro Sheshek raided it, and he sends them north to Ben-Hadad, the king of Aram, Yisrael's northern neighbor, in what today is modern Syria. And with this bribe money, he says in Pasuk Yetet, Brit beni ubencha, uben avi uben avicha. Let's make a treaty between me and you, as was between our fathers. Hine shalachti lecha shochad. I am sending you a bribe. He just says it straight out, calls it what it is. Kesev zahav, gold and silver. Lech hifarei et britcha et Baasha melech Yisrael. Vaya'ale me'alai. I am asking you to break your treaty on behalf of this gold and silver that I'm giving you with Baasha. Apparently, Aram and Yisrael had a non-aggression treaty that they wouldn't hurt each other. And he says, please hurt them. Please start a war at Yisrael's northern border, and then he'll stop hurting me in the south. Ben-Hadad is only too happy to oblige. Vayishma Ben-Hadad in verse 20, El HaMelech Asa, Vayishlach et Sarei HaChayalim Asher Lo Al Arei Yisrael. He does. He accepts the money, and he sends troops against the cities of Yisrael. This is the northern cities. Vayach et Iyun, ve'et Dan, ve'et Avel Beit Macha, ve'et Kol Kinarot, al Kol Eretz Naphtali. He captures certain cities from the area in the land of Naphtali towards the north of the country. And this is effective in Pasuk 21. Vayhi kishmo Basha, as Basha hears this, he has to deal with now his northern border. He gives up on the cities. He can't even fight for them. And he goes back to his capital city in Tirza, and he stops being aggressive in his southern border, stops building up the city of Ramah. While the Psukim themselves do not criticize Asa for what he does, in Divrei Hayamim, Hanani the prophet yells at Asa for engaging in warfare in this way. He says to Asa, "Behisham cha al melech Aram, v'lo nish'anta al Hashem Elokecha." Why did you have to rely on Aram like that? Why couldn't you daven to Hashem? It's not that you weren't allowed to fight the war. You were. They were the one who started up with you. Why would you depend on Aram? Why would you bring in another country like that? That wasn't appropriate. Asa, by the way, is furious at this rebuke, and he puts Hanani in jail. So at the end of Asa's life, we see that he's not perfect, and he's also not reflective, because when his Navi comes and rebukes him, he won't listen to the Navi. Instead, he takes it out on him and, you know, pushes him away, punishes him for criticizing him. We end our time with Asa, who overall is a really, really good king and exactly what Yehuda needed to give them stability and also to connect them to Hashem, which he really does. We end with a strange pasuk. Vayeter et kol devrei Asa v'chol gvorto v'chol asher asa v'arim asher bana haloim k'tivim al sefer devrei yamim l'malchei Yehuda. That's not the strange part. All the rest of Asa's accomplishments and everything he did and the cities that he built, they're written about, if you want to read them, in the history books of Malchut Yehuda. Then we have this strange phrase, Rak la'it ziknato chalat raglav, but in his old age, his legs got very sick. And Rabag explains that this is the Pasuk's way of criticizing Asa for engaging in the warfare that he did by bringing in another country. It seems like it was okay for Asa to fight Israel, especially since they were the aggressors. Hashem does not approve of Asa's political alliances with Aram to fight his brother, Israel. It's complicated to have two neighboring countries who are linked at the core, who have the same language, same history, they serve the same God, at least kind of, and yet they have their own political systems and their own goals, which sometimes, and here very often, seems to lead to war, one against the other. To summarize, this parak tells us about the development of the two countries in the time period after Yeravam, after the split. Malchut Yisrael is getting less and less stable. Nadav ben Yeravam rules for 2 years, and then Yeravam's dynasty is wiped out by Baasha, his general. Baasha tries to wage war on Yehuda, but instead ends up in a war against Aram, where he loses a number of key cities. Yehuda, meanwhile, is unstable as well at first. Aviam rules for only 3 years, but he is followed by Asa, who makes religious reforms and generally follows Hashem, until he chooses to bribe Aram into an alliance with him to protect himself against Yisrael, a move which he is criticized for in Divrei Hayamim by the Navi Hanani, and that deepens the rift between Malchut Yisrael and Malchut Yehuda. Thank you for studying together, Le'ilo Nishmat, Frida Bat Moshe Eliyah. 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 Bat Moshe Eliyah.